time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. But Robert and I are relatively concerned, are we not?
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are. You know, the one thing, we both have children, and I'll tell you, you know, we've been at this. Now, we met each other. Yeah, I got it on. We've been at this. When did we first meet? It was in the 90s sometime.
Oh, yeah, early 90s, 92, 93, maybe.
You know, imagine, you know, a lot of the young guys that are here at Freedom's Phoenix Workshop, they're doing a lot of these things, and there's just a buzz in and out, and there's, we can hear ruckus back there now. And I'll tell you, you know, we were those guys. You know, we've been doing this almost 20 years, you know, together. And I know what... You know the chain of events. You know how they're going to react. The man is so predictable. There is nothing that stops their desire for more power, influence, dominion, money, you know, over your life. There's no, and they'll make any justification. It's always for the children, you know, it's always for, you know, national whatever. I mean, it's never for individual rights or for you. You know, I give you an example. You're talking about the media and how they're rewarded for the kind of coverage that they do. And they got all kinds of awards for them getting some kind of law passed. Some more restriction on people, some more social and economic engineering. And they'll get all kinds of awards and plaques and dinners for that. But where's the, you know, they freed people award? Where's that? I don't remember that. You know, there's never that. You know, but this hasn't been, you know, a secret to a lot of people. You know, I came across, I just put it up at the top of Freedom's Phoenix. Freedom's with an S, phoenix.com. The very top story, it says, Ron Paul from 1988, the American power elite, all right? You go to, I don't know how, I was watching something, and it was one of the side YouTubes that kind of linked to, you might want to see this thing. And I was looking at it, and it was called Alternative Views. And let me click in here, because on the cover screen it has the guys. It was Frank Morrow and Doug Kellner. And it was kind of like, it's like a public access show kind of thing, you know. And, of course, there's like cigarette smoke going everywhere, so you know it's back in 88. So what happened is you get a young Ron Paul. A little bit more edgy, a little bit more like this show. You know, he's kind of softened a little bit. He goes, well, you know, we need to ask ourselves the question. And he's kind of more diplomatic now and so on. But then he's running for president as a libertarian, saying the same stuff, but a lot more edgy. And he brings up things in 88 you know was conspiratorial. Now they got a website and they're all proud of the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberg, you know, group. And he's talking about this. He's going, look, I'm in Congress. I know how they do this. I know what they do. I know who they buy. I know what they're doing. You know, this is how they do it. We have on the front page of Freedom's Phoenix right now, there's another story that someone sent me, and I thought it was interesting enough. I sent it to someone that I know is really into firearms and guns and the history and military and all that, and he sent me back this great evaluation of how our firearms for military are chosen, you know, who makes a decision. You know, what guns are better? What weapon systems are chosen and why? It's called Small Arms Fielding Failures and Solutions. And it was the original presentation was done by, it looks like, Jim Schatz. And then he goes by ATFSUX. ATF sucks. As a gentleman that I sent it to, and he keep me, you know, if you're going to do that, you don't want to know your real name. So he wrote, it's about halfway down on Freedom's Phoenix, and you'll see that's a dog holding a rocket on its back. It's like a new weapon system. But anyway, what happened was he evaluated this, and all you see is that they changed laws to benefit congressmen. I'll give you an example. Strom Thurmond wanted to be able to make the M16 or the M4 carbine. You know, so they wanted to make a, you know, the military version of the 223, and Colt was making it up in, I think, Connecticut, and he wanted it made in the Carolinas. I think he's South Carolina. So he goes, it's a European firm, FN, you know, what do they stand for? I can't remember. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So they make a proposal. They say, you know, you get the law changed where a foreign company can make military weaponry, even to a large percentage, and we'll go ahead and have a factory here, work, you know, deals are done. At the same time, they have new weapon systems. You know, this is all we need to get to this. This one doesn't work. That don't matter. That's not what this is about. It's about certain people making money. You know, then you have all these scandals and Southern California congressmen there making all kinds of money. You know, the Duke, remember that? You know, he's all, you know, getting his cut from the military industrial complex. And you got the health industrial complex. You got the education industrial complex. You got the, all these complexes give you a complex. So I'm looking at this. I'm going, all right, what is the future of this country? What can we expect? Because you have to be able to look at something and have a clear understanding of what the future is if you're going to plan for the your retirement and the upbringing of your kids and your grandkids and where you're going to live and all. And it's simple. You know, this libertarian philosophy has been around since, you know, before the country was founded. You know, the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights that tried to rein in this Constitution central planning thing, you know, was all libertarian philosophy. You know, the rights of the individual, not the collective, not from each according to their needs, you know, abilities to each according to their needs. You know, it's not this, you're a drone for the man. You know, that's not what this is about. The only purpose, Declaration of Independence, that's why it's called Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock, because the Declaration of Independence did not specify what kind of government. It's just how you recognized good and bad. You know, a good government is going to be there to what? Defend the rights of an individual. That's it. If they don't do that, what good are they? There isn't one. That's the whole point. If I got, in the name of government, in the name of the collective, whatever that is, I got somebody forcing a needle into me, I need a new government. I don't want, you know, Matrix Reloaded. You know, that's how we got here. Can we do something else? What? I don't know. We're going to have the only way I could get the gentleman, he was one of the instructors at the Appleseed for firearms training, and his name is Bill Buppert, and he writes a lot for Lou Rockwell. And he was one of the instructors, and he recognized my name. He goes, oh, so yeah, okay, yeah, you know, word up. And we got to talk and become friends. He's bringing his wife up. He can't come up during the week. He's about 3 hours away. He lives in Sierra Vista. You know, it's quite a ways from here in southern Arizona. But he wants to do the show really bad. And so we're going to tape it Sunday morning, and we'll play it sometime next week. And what happens is he is big on states' rights and secession. He's going, because I really always wanted to do this, and I keep promising I was going to do this show, and I just haven't had time to accumulate the research, but he's going to help me. I'm motivated. We're going to do it on the Articles of Confederation. What a lot of people don't know is between the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, George Washington being president, we had 10 presidents. You know, guys like John Hancock. You know, a lot of people don't know. What, we did? We had 10 presidents? I don't remember that in social studies in junior high. They didn't bring that part up. You know, and there's a lot of reasons why. Boston Tea Party writes a lot of gun books, you know, Gun Bible and so on, Molon LeBay. Name's Ken Royce, and he goes by Boston Tea Party. He wrote a book called The Hologram of Liberty. And what it was all about is that when they came together to kind of do some common weights and measures on this Articles of Confederation, they waited till Jefferson, they got him away in France, you know, we put him over there. And then Hamilton, you know, his father-in-law was a merchant in Manhattan, had ties to Bank of England, all this kind of stuff. And they need to get a collectivized, centralized, anized government, okay? They want to get this, you know, we got to get all these colonies under, you know, one whip. You know, you can't. And he even made the argument, you know, if you don't have the ability to tax a country, how can you have a sustained war? I'm like, wow, that is a good reason not to do it, you know? So the thing is that even, I think it was Delaware, they walked out. They said, oh, no, we see what you're doing, you slacker. You know, we're out of here. And then they go, and then the Articles of Confederation was all about it had to be a unanimous decision for them to do anything. In fact, the Declaration of Independence, instead of saying, you know, the consent of the governed, it used to be the unanimous consent of the governed. And I think it was Franklin that argued that out. You know, there was a whole book called The Probability Brooch that was a sci-fi book written by L. Neil Smith that the difference, two parallel universes were totally different based on that one word. In one universe, it had unanimous consent, and in the other, it had it out. We are Jetsons, or we are where we're at right now. We'll talk about it when we come back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and in studio, my longtime friend, Robert Anderson. Now, you know, Anderson is a very interesting story in and of himself. Now, the thing, here's a gentleman that has, you know, a good job, resources. He's way out in the West Valley, and he's had to drive a lot where he worked, and he said, I don't want to do that anymore, and he saw what was coming. He got involved in politics in the early 90s when we were young men, and he's like, yeah, we got to do something. I mean, there's something need to be done, something, man. What brought you into this?
Just, you know, the common understanding, realizing that I had been a libertarian since basically birth and didn't realize there was a political entity that followed what I believed. I had mistakenly found myself following the, you know, the Reagan Republicans until I realized that they really weren't a whole lot different than the, you know, Carter Democrats.
Yeah.
And so I started looking for a political home and found the Libertarian Party. And having got involved in the Libertarian Party, realized that they just want to be Republicans when they grow up. And so I fast-tracked myself towards anarchy and realized that, you know, basically being a government of one is actually the natural state of humans.
Oh, government of one. That's a good one. You know, it's an old joke with libertarian activists. Is like, what's the difference between an anarchist and a libertarian? And it's about 6 or 7 years if you're paying attention, because you go through 3 election cycles, you get it. You know, if you think voting is going to make you free, you haven't been paying attention. Now, it's so rigged, because no matter what, the bad guys support the government that's doing this stuff to you. It's like, it's just, who gets to wear the ring to rule you? You know, it's, I want to wear the ring. Let me wear the ring. It's my turn to get the ring. And they never even challenge the fact that there's a ring. You know, so that's kind of, I don't know how I see it. But, you know, Bob, you know, you were, you know, tell us about your job.
I work out at the nuclear power plant west of Phoenix, and been out there since I got out of the Navy. Spent 6 years in the Navy learning my trade, which is basically reactor operation. And after I got out, I came out from East Coast and made my home here in the Valley. Been here ever since, about probably 26, 27 years now here in the Valley.
So when you wanted to, you had to, because Palo Verde is like 60 miles.
Yeah, it's about that.
You know, west towards Los Angeles from downtown Phoenix. So you're out in the middle of the desert out there.
Right? Oh, yeah.
You have a nuclear power plant, you're in the desert, okay? So you decide, the development's getting, this traffic is getting to be a thing.
Oh, yeah, we drove an hour a day, basically, back and forth to work. So, you know, sometimes you'd have 12-hour shifts out there, you'd be spending 14 hours. And after I, you know, had a couple of young kids and realized that I wanted to spend more time being a dad than I wanted to be driving back and forth on the freeway, I realized I couldn't afford that extra 2 hours of time on the road, but I could be home with my family, and saw the development that was going on, because we're, you know, having exploding development back here when the housing bubble was being inflated, you know, and I knew my hour drive was going to quickly become an hour and a half each way, and I decided, you know, it's time to move out to the desert.
Well, tell me about it. I mean, you know, I'm going to don't make me drag this out of you, man. You know, you went out the desert and you got how much land? What did you do with that land? How'd you develop the land? What's on that land? Where are you now? How long has it been?
Well, we went out there and, you know, basically for the amount of money that we had and the land that was available, it was far more easy to buy nice land because out in the desert, you want to buy nice land. Because it is the desert. So we found some land.
It's still desert. There aren't big trees, okay?
Yeah. Well, at least we had little trees. But, you know, there's some hills there. And the big limiting factor out there is that there's no available power because it's not very developed. And bringing the power in was cost prohibitive. So it was one of those things where we decided to spend the money building our own entity out there with basically solar power and wind power and putting the money into that instead of giving it to the utility.
And a well.
And a well. You know, basically we had to put a well in, had to put a power system in, and we brought the house in, had it set on the ground out there and moved in and been kind of chiseling ourselves a little living out of the raw desert since.
Well, I remember when you had your first baby, you lived in a little camping trailer that you put out there out in the middle of the desert and a little Honda generator or something while they were building all the infrastructure.
Oh, yeah. We spent the first summer. Just happened to be the like record hottest summer.
Yeah, like 123 degrees. And we were out there, I mean, dang. We were out Don't there. Open the door, you know.
Yeah, we were living out there in the desert on the end of a little construction generator. And it was also the year that the gas pipeline from California or from Tucson or whatever, they had that leak. And all of a sudden you couldn't get gas here in the valley. And I was like, I thought I was going to have to drive to California to get, you know, fill up with barrels full of gas to keep my family alive out there in the desert. Because the generator turns off, your life expectancy was measured in minutes.
You know, so. I know. We consider air conditioning here in the Valley of the Sun as life support.
Yeah. So it was one of those things where it's like, you know, your camper just would turn into a hot box.
Well, you know, so I remember, you know, he got a night like 2,600 square foot home. You have a well, septic tank. Satellite communication with your internet, cell phone, your own sewage septic. You got your solar, wind, battery backup.
And generator.
Diesel generator. I mean, you know, so you are what I would consider off-grid. But you have a high quality of living. You didn't sacrifice at all.
Yeah, that was the deal I made with my wife when we moved out there, is that you can walk into my house, and for the most part, other than the fact we got a bunch of compact fluorescent bulbs, you'd be hard-pressed to tell my house wasn't in downtown Phoenix until you walk out on the porch and you realize my nearest neighbor is, you know, you need binoculars to look at him.
Oh, yes. Another thing, though, you're starting to convert over to LEDs.
Yeah, LEDs are the way to go.
I'm telling you, man, that's alien technology, man.
Yeah, it's good stuff, and particularly if you're living off-grid and, you know, your battery bank is what carries you through the night. Every amp counts.
Now this is a lot of things. I want to ask him some of the questions I asked him for, you know, years. So I'm sure the audience is interested in this. To power your home, you can go totally off of your solar how many months out of the year?
Without running my big loads, you know, I mean, the well and things like that are big enough that I couldn't actually. Just here in the last month or two, I've upgraded the system where I could actually probably run my well off of it. But, if it wasn't for the big loads like my well, I could probably go 3 to 5 days as long as the sun was shining pretty good every day. And of course, down here in the valley, the sun shines pretty good most of the year. So
what happens is that you have your diesel generator for like to fill your big, how many gallons of water tank is that?
I got a 2,500 gallon storage
tank. Okay, so you got a big storage tank. To fill that up, you need a high power to run the pump on the well to fill that up.
Right, it's 220 volts and it's a, you know, multi horsepower deep well pump because the water table's down pretty far out here.
Okay, and then you have if you're doing air conditioning in the summer, you're going to need to run your diesel.
Right, we run the diesel generator most of the time during the summertime for the air conditioning.
Okay, so then, you know, you're out there because to bring the power out when you're out rural like that, different states are different. Like our friend Eric in New Mexico, he paid almost nothing. I mean, a quarter, you know, a mile out to his property out there is there some deal, and he's like $1,900 or some stupid thing like that. I'm like, really? Now, Bob, you know, for them to bring out, even though you're the man out there making the nuclear power, how much was it to take out the power, you know, from your property line?
No, it would have been more than the property was worth. You know, it's like $25,000-$30,000, and that was originally when the power was even further away. Some neighbors have actually toughed it out and come We're closer now. I think our nearest neighbor's like a half a mile away. But it was even further when we first bought the property. So
I remember some of your neighbors, they move out there and they go, well, how's he got power? He's got lights on. You know, the power goes out in the valley from the grid and you turn on your floodlights.
Yeah, you know, I heard you talk about this morning. You said your power went out. And I was like, geez, I wonder what that's like to actually have a power outage. It's been so long since I had one.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You slacker. So what happens is, Bob, you know, you have the opportunity to just you make your own power. You know, if you need, you got battery backup, you have the solar charges the batteries, you have diesel when you need high power or you want to top those off, you have, you can do pretty much anything. I mean, your diesel will, you know, cover just about anything. You don't need that all the time, and but in the summer. But then you added your little tower thing. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I bought a wind turbine. I got tired of watching the solar panels just sit there and not do anything, so I put a wind turbine in because they're a lot more interesting to watch in solar panels. And it was just kind of a hobby. I wanted to build something and put it up myself. And I go to this little website that I go to. It's called otherpower.com. These guys are building windmills. It has a little cottage industry where they do it. And they actually build their own really good, better than commercial wind turbines. And I wanted to try my hand at it. So I put a wind turbine up on my property. And I've been pretty pleased with the performance.
Because we used to complain every time we go out there certain times of the year, the wind's blowing. Oh, curse you, wind! And now it's like, blow on!
Yeah,
blow on! You know, when we come back, we'll talk about, we'll get more details about this total off-grid living. A whole different lifestyle. And if you can do it in the desert, you can do it there.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Less conversation, a little more action.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and my friend Mr. Robert Anderson sitting in telling us all about how to be off the grid. Because if you're not off the grid, then you're on the grid. You know, and let me tell you how government looks at it. You know, you deal with these guys after a while. I mean, up close and personal. I mean, you're campaigning. You're going to the forum. Yeah, Bob, you know, is running for office too. And I'll tell you, you know, if you're not in control, you're out of control. And it freaks them out. They can't handle it. You know, I'll tell you this about Bob. You know, I forgot all about this. Bob was in the most expensive, up to that time, congressional race in the nation. There was over, it was like 46 million dollars spent on this one little bitty baby congressional race, and it was the Republican J.D. Hayworth versus Steve Owens, which was the state chair of the Democratic Party here in Arizona. I think it was a doctor too, or lawyer or something. Anyway, he's something. So what happens is Robert Anderson is the Libertarian candidate. And we go in and we're planning for debates. And here in Arizona, we get included in a lot of debates and everything because we do a lot of work and a lot of things that we do. So, you know, the people be like, it's not a debate unless Libertarians in there. I mean, you know, and the only time anybody watches them when we're in there, that's the only thing that makes it any fun. So we get involved in debates. So this is a big, you know, thing. It's a statewide televised debate. And we're doing our, you know, debate prep the night before in the jacuzzi drinking beer, you know, and whatever, and saying, yeah, you know, we're just having fun. And I remember we go to the TV studio, and one of the Libertarians, state chair, Mike Duggar, at the time, he had a fanny pack. He gets, like, jumped on. They're searching him, seeing if he had a gun in his fanny pack. And I go, I was kind of surprised he didn't. But anyway, so we go to this thing, and they're asking, you know, doing the questions back and then forth. And I'll tell you what happened. They were spending so much money on this race, you know, the unions this, the Republican Party that, back and forth to get it. Then at the end of the election, it was so close that it was like 2 weeks before we found out who won. And, you know, you were like 10 times the difference between the two or something.
Yeah,
you know,
I can't remember what the numbers were. I had like, you know, 7 or 8%. But, you know, the race was so tight. It was what made the difference.
So then 2 years later, it was the same three guys running again.
Yep.
So it was, you know, Hayworth, Owens, Anderson, two. And the first time, the Republican man, he would always say, my liberal opponent, I guess he's referring to the Democrat, never even mentioned you. The second election, my good friend and buddy, my bestest buddy, Robert, man, we just friends and all, my brother. I mean, it was amazing because they knew they have to embrace this libertarian cloak, you know, this rhetoric, this mantle of any kind of credibility. And I remember in the first one, the debate, it was going like this, and they asked a question, and they were talking about Social Security, because it, the numbers, you know, this is 96. I remember, this was 96, the first one, and then 98. 96, you're talking 13 years ago. And they knew that we were going to be in the financial situation we are now. We all knew it's math. This was simple math. The baby boomers retiring now that they knew were going to start retiring 2012, around in there, it's done. The Mayans had it right, man. The world falls apart when the baby boomers retire, okay?
Yeah, they've been talking for years trying to figure out how legislation that they could get a handle on this. It was the largest repository of untapped wealth was the money the baby boomers had set aside for retirement, and they figured out how to get it.
Yeah, there's all these pensions. You know, like I remember you and your friends down there, you know, Palo Verde, APS, there's a public service, got all, you know, your money in, kind of did whatever they could get out, they got out and bought gold. Yeah, we're good. It went down. Well, that sucks for y'all. You know, now why? This is what happens when you know what's going to happen. You can prepare for it. Well, what they were preparing for was the total collapse. You know, this entitlement thing, they knew where we were going. This is, and it's not even got started good yet. So we talk about it, and the issue came like this, and here's the Republican. They go, we need to have a firewall around Social Security so they can stop spending it and stuff. It's all gone. It's not there anymore. Trust fund my butt. It's general budget, and it's gone, okay? So now we just kind of keep raising it on our grandkids to see if we can get, one worker or 15 recipients or something. You know, that's what's going to happen. So what happens is that you have this question, and it goes to a Democrat. We need to do this, and we got to, you know, and socially and economically engineer and turn the dials this way and so on. And Republicans are going to build a firewall around the fund. And Bob goes, can we build a firewall?
Firewall around my wallet.
You know, I just want a firewall around my wallet. And we're just all busting a gut. And you know the state is like, yes, yes. So while libertarian candidates around the country are happy to get 1% to 3%, here in Arizona, if we get less than 6%, 7%, 8%, we're like, you know, we're slackers and we don't spend any money. Why? Because we take a hardcore, no compromise position. But now, I don't know, the election computers are dialing that back down. You know, we don't care. We don't care. It's communication with the people. I get to stand on this soapbox for free and tell the people what's coming. You know, I vote that. So, you know, there's so much value in that. Well, in addition to that, we make personal decisions. You know, you start worrying, it's just an emotion. It's a warning that you need to do something. You know, I get some chickens. You know, I get a garden. You know, you get a reloader, you buy some ammunition, you get an extra car, an old beat-up Suburban with four-wheel drive and a trailer to kind of, and you load up and whatever else. I mean, all of us are doing different things. You know, Bob goes, you know what? I'm outside the checkpoints.
Yeah, buy a windmill.
And so now that you're out there, tell me about your standard of living. I mean, because you're really starting, like right now your wife is doing some infrastructure today that she's planning for something. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, you know, we've chiseled our way into the desert here and actually trying to make a nice little place there. We got big backyard, put some gardens in, and so we can have fresh vegetables for juicing. And she's been putting sprinklers in for our landscaping. You know, we've gone out and we got a bunch of trees that we brought in, you know, mesquite trees and Palo Verde trees, and we're putting in a little underground watering system so I'm not out there having to drag the hose around out, you know, out in the yard when it's 110 degrees.
For 5 years?
Yeah, we can just push a button. Well, yeah, got to work. It'll take little baby steps. You know, that was just the next step in the thing. And so now we're going to be able to start having the trees grow up, and they'll shade the house some more. And you know, it's just you just keep taking little steps every year to make it a little bit nicer.
You know, the one thing that I thought was you should really emphasize, I don't know if you're going to do it this year, you had a little test thing on how to create warm air, you know, and you had an extra garage that you had built, and it would go in there and it's cold. I mean, sometimes in the desert it can get cold.
Oh yeah,
and it's warm in there, and I'm like, how are you heating this? He goes, let me show you. Explain to the people what you did.
Well, this is a thing called hot air solar collector, and it's basically just a it's like building a picture window that's not connected to your house, and you just have some clear glazing. I use the clear acrylic waved roofing material that they have for like greenhouses, and I used some black material in the back that I just painted black and made a little frame out of it and forced air through it. And
so imagine it's a 2x4 made from the metal 2x4s.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of that, you know, framing inside office buildings and so on. And he made a 4x8 square, and he had like a maze, and you had an opening in the side at the bottom, and then it's a maze that went back 3 or 4 or 5 times. And then you had an opening at the top with a little, I don't know, you used a solar fan or something?
I had a little fan. I had a little solar panel that I had used. It ran the fan, just blew some air through it, and it would keep that garage plenty warm as long as the sun was shining.
And, you know, so then you insulate it well, and you can, I mean, you can survive. And this, I tell you, it produced just one 4x8 sheet. How large was your garage? It was like 900?
Yeah, 25 by 25. It's like 500 square feet. Or so.
So you got a 500 square foot area and a 4x8, you know, just stuff.
Right.
Yeah, and just, you're heating it.
Oh, yeah. I was pretty amazed. You know, I did it mostly as an experiment because one thing we don't really need a whole lot of in Arizona is more hot air. And we get extra, and we like to, you know, export it, bring in some cold air. But it was just an experiment that I had a little extra time and some money that I wanted to play around with and had been reading about. I wanted to see just how viable it was, and it's very viable. Anybody who lives in any kind of a cold climate really needs a lot of heat.
Was it worth doing for the winter here?
No. I wouldn't do it down here just because, I mean, if I didn't have other heating methods, I'd do it. But I have other heating methods that are, you know, not worth my time and effort. It's easy enough just to pay to have the propane guy bring propane and run my regular heater.
Well, but I was impressed with that. That produced way more heat than I thought it would. And then we've researched it. If you go on Freedoms Phoenix, Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com, and you'll go at the top, horizontal navigation bar right towards the top of the page, you'll see it says front page, archive. You go into archive, and it'll drop down. It'll say contents by subject. You go to energy, or you go to off-grid living. If you scroll down to those categories, you'll see that we have, you know, plans for this stuff. I mean, through over the years, whenever Bob has come up there, I go look at him and go, wow, man, this is cool. And we'll go put that stuff up. In fact, Bob, you know, is, you know, listed editor, and he's put more stuff up on this stuff. I mean, he lives it. He's more worried about doing it. That's another thing. You go and you look, and what he did is he has a 10 by 10 foot pit that he just dug a hole, put in cinder blocks, filled it with concrete, put a concrete floor at the bottom, put a top on it, built a shed on it with a trap door, and that's his battery compartment down there. And in the shed, he has a 4x8 sheet of plywood up there. It's nice and organized, and it has all of his electrical inverters there.
My converters and inverters.
And when we come back, we'll talk about setting this up. You can do this too. How much it costs, what it produces, you need to know. We'll be right back.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
It ain't so groovy when you're screaming in the night. Let me out of this cheap B-movie. Headlong down the highway, and you're rushing headlong out of control. And you think you're so strong, but there ain't no stopping, and you can't stop rocking, and there's nothing you can do.
There's something I can do about it. You know, I can declare my independence. That's what I can do. And I'll tell you know, how do you declare your independence? You stop being dependent. And who's an independent kind of guy? Mr. Robert Anderson. Hello. You know, let's go ahead and talk about the actual infrastructure. Now, I'm out there. I'm getting my house put in. And you got an electrical box. I mean, you got electrical, you know, wheel box kind of thing sitting there. You plug the house in. Has a plug. You got to plug in the house. So you plug in the house, and then it plugs in the wood.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I had a manufactured home brought out and put out on the land because it was just the quickest and easiest thing to do to get basically on the site, which is, you know, they bring in this, like, you know, two-piece house bolted together, boom, house.
Well, it's 2x6 construction, so yeah, you got pretty good insulation.
Yeah, yeah. It was a good house, and I'm you know, I'm still pretty pleased with it. You know, anybody looking at manufactured homes, you know, there's a lot to be said for them. And it has a meter box, just like, you know, you pull up in front of my house, so you have a meter. In fact, it was kind of funny when I first moved in out there. I had a lot of people that would drive up the driveway, and they're just like, yeah, we're, you know, kind of your neighbors, although I didn't have any neighbors, but they're fellow landowners. And what they're doing, I noticed the whole time they were talking to me, they're kind of like looking around and wondering, and I realized that they were looking for the wires, because all these people who owned land, they didn't want to have to spend the nut to bring the power over. They're all waiting for somebody else to do it, because once the power comes over, they can all tap onto the line, makes their land worth more money, because that's the advantage of buying land without the power there, is that it's cheaper. So they're looking all around like, how the heck does this guy get power over here? Because I want to basically piggyback off it, and darn it, he didn't bring it over.
They bought the land with the house out there, and they probably didn't do their due diligence, and the agent didn't tell them, and they buy the land. And this one guy had like a horse property out there and stuff, and you see him way out in Lone Prairie out there, and I remember him coming over, Help me.
Yeah, well, my neighbor over there, he's, you know, when they first moved out there, we often give him quite a bit of help. In fact, he was going that route for a while. He was going to do a generator and a little off-grid thing, but he eventually decided it was worth his while to bring the electricity over. And now it's that much closer to my place. You know, sooner or later, somebody else is going to take the land between him and me, and they'll develop it, and they'll bring power a little closer. And before you know it, maybe I'll have the power next to my property, and I won't have had to pay a dime for it. And not that I would hitch up. Me and my wife have talked about it before. You know, they could come up to the door and knock on and say, hey, would you like to hitch up power? I would probably say, no. Because we've gotten used to the living. It's not that difficult. There's really no impact to our, standard living. And I kind of like the idea that, you know, I haven't lost my power, and I can't remember how long.
And you're green.
Yeah, reasonably green. So, you know, I mean, the infrastructure really wasn't that hard. The material's all easily available. The research is all on the internet. There's, if you want to go in there and, do it yourself. I had a background that loaned itself for me doing a lot of the work myself. But even if you know nothing about electricity or that, you know, it's just a matter of money.
Well, give us some of the websites. Get a couple of websites. You know, well, people, get ready, get a pen.
Yeah, there was there used to be a free online magazine. Now they take subscription because I guess they, free market. They finally decided they were popular enough that they should make some money for all their effort, and it was called Home Power Magazine. And there were a lot of articles in there about, kind of a consumer report kind of thing about various renewable energy equipment and how to do setups and things like that, so you could do some research on what was the better products. And then there's this website I go to that talks about all kinds of different alternate energy things. They kind of specialize in windmills, and I mentioned already that otherpower.com. And they're just a bunch of folks up in Colorado that have, like I say, started a little cottage industry building windmills because basically they live like 20 miles into the mountains. And they've worked this thing into a little going concern where they actually, build these windmills semi-commercially and sell them off to people who want to build them. And they do a little eBay selling, and they make a good product. Because that's really hard to find a good windmill. You either get people that are selling you junk, or it's prohibitively expensive. You know, if you're not buying one of these multi-megawatt units like GE or something like that, to find
a
good solid...
Well, what do you think you and I have this conversation, this debate, this argument all the time about, I keep track of new technology that's coming on, and Bob's like, yeah, is it on eBay, can I buy it now? Well, if I can't, then it doesn't exist. Okay. So I'm going, yeah, but it's right here, man. It's right, so what is it that you see that's close enough that you would consider available technology that's going to be something you'd add on to your Lone Prairie?
I'd like to see someone build a home-size solar thermal plant. They have whole home-size thermal plants that they plan on chaining all together for utility scale. They might be 15, 20 kW size, like Stirling dishes.
You say kW, what is it that would run a home?
My generator is about a 15 kW generator, and I run my air conditioner and easily run all my home on it. My house at any given time, I'm lucky if I'm only using a kilowatt hour of energy at any given time, unless I'm running something really big like my air conditioner. So, washer, dryer, sometimes, if you sit there and you go...
On everything you have, you're up to what?
Seven. 7 kilowatt
hours. So a 7 kilowatt hour, and you can get a some kind of a solar furnace thing that can do two houses.
Yeah, it'd be amazing if they could do that. I don't know, again, it'd be mostly rural living stuff, because you sit there and you talk about trying to put these inside of a suburban area like downtown Phoenix, but then you have central generation points for that, it's utility and scale. I tell people, being in the power industry, I tell people, if you've got wires running in your house, you're not connected to it, you probably can't do it cheaper than the utility can, because, there's
just all kinds of subsidies.
Yeah, and there's utility and scale for the consumer, unless you're doing it because you just love the planet. I'm not green because I'm, or I'm not off-grid because I'm this green freak. I enjoy the outdoors and I care about the environment, but I do it because it was economically the best decision to make at the time.
Well, tell me about that, because we had on Freedom's Phoenix, you go to our energy category, and there are neighborhood size plants that they're starting to do. They're even getting the fusion reactors.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that ever comes to be. They're good in theory, but there's a lot of things that they could do. I think, not that you want to model the Soviet Union, but there was a lot of places where they basically did that because of the cold winters over there. They had centralized power plants where they used the plants made electricity, and then the waste heat that all power plants put out, they used it for central heating. They'd run basically pipe hot water through all these through the city. And they do that back east a lot, too. You know, Boston, New York, things like that. They have
it's just a little radio reactor.
Yeah, they have central heating plants where they run all the, you know, the steam through. A lot of people don't realize Phoenix has a big chilling loop downtown where they basically run cold water through a lot of the downtown area for the big high-rise, so they don't have to have their own chilling units, and they use the big air conditioners at the ballpark for when they're not playing baseball. They're cooling the downtown area.
Really? You know, tell me about that technology, though. I interrupted you. You're saying it was solar.
So,
what?
Well, big. They're finding out a lot of the utilities, and everybody thinks it's like, oh, these solar plants are going to put up all these solar panels. They really don't. You know, what's happening is you see a lot of these plants are putting up what they call solar thermal plants, which are basically solar collectors that make hot water, make steam. And once you have steam, it's just your conventional turbine system. And the utilities are real familiar with these turbine systems that turn, you know, turbine turns generator, electricity goes down the wires. They, you know, it's a business they know. So it's just a different boiler, and they're pretty straightforward, and they're far more efficient than trying to take the sunlight and convert it right to electricity.
Well, tell me about, you know, because you've been experimenting with some stuff, ordering some jojoba beans or whatever the heck they are from Argentina to be able to make biodiesel.
Biodiesel is a good thing. Right now, it's more work than it's, you know, it's worth.
Well, this algae thing is really starting to develop.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways of, you know, making a viable biodiesel. It's just a matter of your time and effort. It's a good idea to know how to do it in case the time comes when.
Do you know?
I know how to do it.
And
it's good. I spend a lot of my time gaining different knowledges so that if the time ever comes, I can exercise it, or at least I can tell people how it can be done. Wood gasifiers, there's a lot of things going on about wood gasifiers. They used them all the time over in Europe during World War II because basically the Allied forces were, like, you know, bombing all the oil refineries. And so
when I was a kid, I saw an old movie. It was about them trying to save the kids in an orphanage in this big school bus, and they had...
Yeah, it was a Robert Mitchum movie, I think.
Yeah, they're in the Philippines or whatever. They were throwing coconut husks or something into this thing, and it was making the bus run. And I'm a kid, I'm like, what the heck are you doing, man? You had this class, and you're not giving us a class on, you know, I mean, this movie, you're not giving us a class on how this bus works? Yeah. Explain that to people. Yeah. You make a chunk of wood makes your bus run. How does that work?
Yeah, it's, you know, whenever you burn something, not everything burns. A lot of it's just gas, and it goes away as smoke. Well, if you capture the smoke and filter all the, you know, particulate out of it, your internal combustion engine will run just fine on it. Type in wood gasification into Google Net. There's even a FEMA paper on it not too long ago where they were trying to tell everybody in the United States how to do this in case we got into a position where we didn't have oil. There's a big thing on there on how to build a wood gasification system.
So what is it? What gas is it? Methane or something?
That's various anes that come out of, you know, methane or something like that comes out of the wood process.
Because when you heat it, you got a log burning. The actual flame that you see is not really on the wood. It's
burning the gas
being heated off of the wood. So what they're doing is if you get a fire going and coals and so on, and you throw wood in there, you just keep throwing it in there, it generates the gas, and if you got it contained, it'll go into like a intake manifold that goes into your car, and it's running off of the gas created off of the wood.
That's correct.
So I'm going, you know, and this is like, you know, decades old technology, and they need to share that with somebody. Hello.
It's certainly not something you'd want to be doing, you know, on a whim, but it'd sure be nice to know how to do it if all of a sudden you couldn't get diesel fuel and, you know, it's 120 degrees outside and your family needs air conditioning.
Yeah, the point that I wanted to make with Bobby, he has a day off, is that, you know, come down and just to share how much value knowledge is. I mean, do you know what's going to happen with the economy and why? Or who do you have confidence in? Math? Or some talking head on CNN, Fox News, ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, PBS? I mean, are these guys telling you what's what? How well has that been working out for you?
Learn to garden, folks. Learn to garden.
Yeah, you know, Bob and I, we've become big juice fans, man. We've got our wives just grinding up for us, you know, and I feel a lot better. We're going to do that show here probably about another 2 weeks after I go a full month on this because, you know, I need to share this with you. But the thing is that knowledge is power. And guess who doesn't want you to have power or knowledge? Yeah, well, bypass, unplug from the matrix, be free, and declare your independence. You don't even need a government form.